A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to the AEW Dynamite Review. We are the Dudley Boys of What Culture. I'm Adam Wilborn, joined by Michael Hanfler and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube. Where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Collision, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Pay-per-views, premium live events, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup that we complete the Money Quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Hanfler and Sidgwick to review last night's Dynamite and Sidge, the go-home show ahead of AEW Dynasty.
Yep. I tweeted some thoughts I have about the general direction of AEW, the complexion of that top of the card, and I was already getting told off, and I was like, I can't be arsed. I can't
be
asked.
Salient tweet, to be honest.
Yeah, the general.
As a mega fan that's currently not logged on, can you apologise and then repeat it back to me?
Yeah, thank you. So the general gist is there's just so little for me to sink my teeth into in terms of stories. Do you know what I mean? I think I've been, in retrospect, just blindsided by how good the new Elite is. Mm-hmm. And then that's bad because that's good.
Mm.
I hate the Blackpool Combat Club a great deal. Like, to the point where I'm getting actively pissed off, to the point where my intelligence is being insulted now.
Mm. Not the people in it, we should say.
I think Bryan Danielson is, at a minimum, the second best professional wrestler who's ever graced the sport. John Moxley, I just love him.
Mm-hmm.
Claudio is a magnificent beast. Really, he's not really in it anymore, but he's injured and all the rest of it. I hate the Blackpool Combat Club, and I need them to split up. And I will go into this more in depth as the podcast unfolds. I will say, elements of this Dynamite were very, very good.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm finding it really hard to care. And it's as much as what AEW isn't, and what I think it should be, that's annoying me as much as what it is. But we'll get into it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be all over the place trying to articulate thoughts here. It's not going to be the smoothest ride, this podcast, but I hope I can really drill into it as we go.
And if you want more analytical, in-depth stuff, I suppose you can read ups and downs at whatculture.com.
It's a transcript of the pod.
Hanfler, what do you make of it?
Yeah, good in an unremarkable, this is a cold product kind of way. Like, AEW has occupied that spot for most of 2024, save for, if you listen to the preview yesterday, this kind of last couple of weeks where they've been distracted by other things. Again, a bad time to get distracted by other things when you're building a pay-per-view in the aftermath of WrestleMania and have an opportunity to take the conversation back. I think AEW's been pretty good this year. It is the colder of the two mainstream North American products. It's the colder of the two products we cover every week. And the comparisons, I don't think, look, even Tony Khan told you this week, the comparisons are good for business. He, when things are going good, the comparisons are great. When things are going bad, when things are going bad, the gulf appears wider between the market leader and the challenger brand, phrases he likes. I think this is maybe the best AEW you can do at the moment is to just be good. I repeat myself on this podcast all the time. Just hold the wheel. Just stay the course.
I think it could be cleaner.
You have to do more of episodes like this with maybe higher highs than this Dynamite had, truthfully. You need to do a lot more of this before it's going to feel overall hot again. Like, I always think of Too Cool when I think of the 2000 boom. Too Cool and Rikishi.
Oh my God.
Come on.
As WWE's 2000 boom. Right now, like AEW are a long way away from having a product so hot that the undercard's going to feel big time again. But you just have to run weeks and weeks and weeks of Dynamites like this to even start approaching that point again. So I would rather a Dynamite like this than like the last couple or a lot of 2023s.
I'm starting to think some philosophical differences need to be made, but I will get into it quite imminently, actually. Mm.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this show after the debacle that was.
Sounds like it.
Well, I'm about to say, yeah, I really enjoyed this show. John Moxley's back. The Elite are great, as you mentioned there. We got finally the ball seeming to be really starting to roll for Mercedes Moné. And then, you know, the top of the second hour happened. But we'll get into that because the show opened with John Moxley coming out to a huge baby, of course. Comes through the crowd, gets in the ring. He stopped to sign autographs and stuff. It's great to see him back. And he's there with the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. And he said one of the first titles he ever won was at a Salvation Army here in Indiana 20 years ago. He's always been swimming upstream. Many people told him he couldn't do. And his reaction to those is the same as it is back then, as it is now. Kiss his ass. Shows off his new title. You deserve it, Chance. He said he never thought he'd be holding this, and he never thought the IWGP title would be brought to Dynamite. It all comes down to how deep you're willing to go to show that is what AEW is all about. Then he turns his attention to the Don Callis family, calls Don Callis a creep. He says, if you put a target on Bryan Danielson's back, you've put a target on mine, basically. Come and find me. I'll be here all night. I could run you over in the parking lot or bash you with a tire iron, but you wouldn't learn anything. He wants to call out the biggest and baddest of the Don Callis family. And he calls out Powerhouse Hobbs for next week on Dynamite. He said, look, Hobbs is going to accept. He's just going to learn how out of depth he is. He's going to drag him to the deepest waters. He'll not see a shoreline. And Hobbs will know the difference between Moxley and himself and realize Don Callis has been feeding him lies. And there will only ever be one John Moxley.
So this is part of my problem, right? Mm-hmm. I loved the experience of John Moxley talking at length and believing in himself again and having something, the IWGP title and what it symbolizes, the respect, the direction, like the how it's legitimized him, et cetera, et cetera. I loved the experience and indeed the idea of Ace John Moxley's back opening up Dynamite.
Yeah.
The actual felt in the stomach experience of watching that promo was great. I don't think the content of the promo was particularly good. And I think that's of lesser importance. It's just the idea of him being a babyface, as Hamflet used to call him, the sheriff, the ace figure. I was blinded by that. And then I listened to the promo again and it echoed in my mind. Quite frankly, some of this verbiage is well below his standards, talking about dragging an opponent to deep waters. Mm. That is every other wrestling promo I've ever heard. But again, the content was almost irrelevant.
He should say just, he was starving.
I was just going to say he's not hungry. Yeah. That's something like that.
At least, but like the dragging into deep waters, like I've heard everyone say that. Edge, Spears, like all of them. So that was a little bit, meh. But again, it was the experience. What really annoyed me is that one of the fundamental reasons why I love Jon Moxley and one of the fundamental reasons why I'm feeling an emotional disconnect from this AEW product is that Jon Moxley used to be the guy who, through the Jericho podcast, his promos in 2019 and 2020, he was the guy who was the straight shooter, the one you can believe in a bullshit world.
Yeah.
That's what he was.
Yeah.
In this promo, he says, Don Callis is a creep. Why did you align with him loosely last year? I've seen Jon Moxley cut promos alongside Don Callis and Kinosuke Takeshita during what, the Blood and Guts build?
Yeah.
When they were feuding with the Elite? What's changed? Well, I'll tell you what's changed. Jon Moxley and the BCC's character alignment seemingly every other week.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good enough. It's so loose. It's so unclean. It's so messy. It's so hard to believe in. It's so hard to just get a hold of and invest in and get it. I just don't understand what the hell they're doing with the Blackpool Combat Club. And it's, first of all, for a while you were wasting Jon Moxley, right? Which is bad enough as it is, because he's such an asset when he's even emulating old form. Even when it feels like a false dawn, I still want it, you know? But the idea that he'll bash up Phoenix one week could be really harsh, but it's fine because other people in his group are feuding with Ricky Starks and Big Bill, who are baddies.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And now, right, I'm going to try and do justice to how I feel about this, because it's so... So John Moxley comes out, puffed chest, you went after my mate, after the match, like, you broke some kind of code or whatever, on Collision, you went after Danielson, well, that means you're going to have to deal with me and all the rest of it. On the surface, proper babyface stuff. They are in opposition with an established gang of bad dudes, except there's a babyface.
Oh, my God. And Will Ospreay, don't get me started.
And then in the match, deeper in the show, you get Claudio Castagnoli, who I think at this point is in the babyface group,
yes,
at least this week, because they're going against the heel group in the Don Callis family. So Will Ospreay is the babyface in the heel group. Claudio Castagnoli is playing heel and going for his eyes and jumping in before the bell and depriving the fans of the big spot by, oh, I'm not going to take the dive. Claudio's the heel in that match, but he's in the babyface group. Will Ospreay is the babyface in that match, but he's in the heel group.
Yeah.
It's, I'm not saying, right,
the situational thing is eating itself.
It's eating itself. It's getting ridiculous now. And I said on Twitter that I just want some goodies and baddies. And then, of course, you get the pancakes, waffles thing. Do you know what I'm talking about by that? It's a famous tweet.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a famous
tweet. Why would you shoot on waffles then? I was just saying, yeah, I like saying pancakes. Yeah.
I like pancakes. What's the problem with waffles? No, bitch. That's a whole new sentence, right? I got a pancakes, waffles thing where I was like, right, okay. It's never just been goodies and baddies. Because, you know, even MJF versus CM Punk, ostensibly as classic as it gets, there was a point in that program where you think, could MJF be redeemed?
Yeah.
Is he doing a trick? And even if he's doing a trick, does that mean I still can't feel any sympathy for the horrible things he's gone through? At various points, Paige, so defensive, was almost kind of a dick when he was celebrating away from Kenny Omega when they won the World Tag Team titles. But you know it's just because he's insecure. He's not an arsehole. He's just projecting and lashing out and stuff. So it's always been a little bit sophisticated, but it's always had an emotional thrust. There was always identifiable characteristics within these people that you're watching on TV that you feel something for one way or the other. I feel nothing with this directionless Blackpool Combat Club tweener, narratively selective, convenient. I just want it to be pure. Why can't we get Dusty Rhodes versus Ric Flair? I'm watching this and I had the epiphany again watching Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Like, that's what the business is.
Yep.
You can be more textured, which AEW has at its peak with MJF and Punk,
yeah,
and Omega versus Page. At its core, it's a study in contrasts. Hangman Page and Kenny Omega. It's a bit more ambitious than something like Dusty versus Ric Flair.
Yeah.
But at its core, there's a contrast, and that is vital. And this is a problem with the Swerve Joe stuff, yeah, later, right? In that Hangman Page is a guy who has anxieties, and he's, in his own head, the worst person in the group. Am I even elite? What world titles have I won? Am I just allowed to be in the group and haven't done anything yet? The contrast is Kenny Omega is elite. He has won the world titles. He's got all the critical acclaim. He's beat him at Full Gear, you know? There's a contrast of, like, completely entitled guy who's been corrupted by Don Callis into believing he's this ace figure versus this guy who never once deemed himself capable of being it. Like, there's motive, there's contrast, there's storytelling. There's nothing in this BCC Don Callis stuff. It's blah, tweener, crap, that you cannot begin to make sense of if you start to really think about it.
I felt a little bit guilty as well, because, and nothing against Powerhouse Hobbs, we love him here, of course. And obviously, if you're going to have Moxie have his first match back, he's got to win, and Hobbs can kind of eat losses. But when he said the biggest and baddest in the Don Callis family, I was like, yes, it's a Kestra match, let's go. And I was like, oh, yeah, Powerhouse Hobbs, that's great as well.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't thought
I felt
of
a little
that,
bit guilty,
yeah,
about that.
It's just, I mean, it's just so messy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, everything's messy.
Like, I don't know if this is part of your pancakes and waffles problem you've experienced, but I would say as well, the use of Punk and MJF and Kenny and Hangman Page and Cody and Roman, actually, they're the very best examples. It doesn't even need to be that complex. I know I'm a thick fed guy, but my, like, showering of praise every week of Jey Uso's move to Raw and how that drove primarily Drew McIntyre's heel turn, but all the other, like, this is fairly broad WWE storytelling. That's like a much lower down version of, well, this is how these characters would behave.
Yes.
And, like, that's Kevin Owens is a baby face, but he doesn't really trust Jey Uso because of their history. you can still make sense of who's the babyface and who's the heel. You know that Kevin Owens is the babyface and Drew's the heel. And that was a much broader, thicker example compared to the ones you've used there. The AEW, it's more superior in terms of its storytelling. At every level, from the main event, from the peak of wrestling storytelling, to the basic mid-card stuff when you're trying to get new people over, that good guys, bad guys thing should probably still be respected.
Like yeah, I think just
it should still be adhered to. The whiteboard rules that you can never stray from, the TV show's rules and stuff, that should still be in every pro wrestling show's rule set.
Yeah. I still have an emotional connection with John Moxley anymore, even though I kind of felt like I did, and then I listened to what he said. So you aligned with Callis last year? At the very least, I would expect a character who's meant to have the integrity of John Moxley to say, to like, you know, square that, to like acknowledge it.
Yeah.
It just feels like I'm trying to get... I don't know, man.
I lost touch with Moxley and Kingston's relationship for that exact reason last year because I thought they were telling like a really, really elegant story with Rene Paquette that was trying to suggest that Kingston was somehow the heel in this when we knew it was Moxley that had kind of gone off the rails. And they sort of abandoned that. And at some point, they're going to be mates again because they're both now baby faces. And that was the one I thought, how have you lost me on this? I was pleased to see John Moxley here. And that was the biggest compliment I can pay because I was sick of him. So the break has helped. The rest has helped. To be honest, with the IWGP title, I wouldn't rush him back into too many more of these Dynamite matches. He can wrestle Hobbs next week. I think there's nice. It's funny that Sidgwick pulled from last year and a thing that thus makes no sense of what Moxley said when I quite liked that it was Hobbs because they're back in dailies. And if you remember, it was Moxley that gave Hobbs' big moment in dailies. Like, this guy is going to be the guy before he turned and joined Team Taz.
And that was when Mox barely teamed with anyone.
Yeah, and he gave him the sort of stamp of approval. And I love that, like, all these years later, they're going to be back in dailies having that match. That was the AEW lore that popped into my head. So I was probably a little bit higher on this than Sidge. But it was also, in terms of the content of the promo, it wasn't amazing. But it was it made me realise, again, this sort of... Maybe Adam Copeland wanted to do this, but I thought the Punk security footage kind of hung Adam Copeland out to dry because it was like, come on, guys, positive pro wrestling, move on from that guy. 1 week later, here's the footage. It's all you can talk about. Yeah. This hung Adam Copeland's speech out to dry even more so because Moxley is a proper thoroughbred AEW guy doing the rah-rah stuff, and it made you realise that a guy that's 6 months in from WWE can't credibly do that.
He was so successful at it as well that the booming crowd response like got me a little bit.
Yeah. People want, like he made, instantly made people want to fight for the brand again. And that's what's been lost for quite a while.
I don't need it for another four weeks at least. Yeah.
So we go backstage, Mercedes Money. Brings up how someone attacked her in the dark. They're afraid to face her in the light, she says. She always gets back up, though. She can't wait to pay back the bitch who attacked her last week. She says, lights off as well. Sounds a little bit familiar, Julia Hart. Sounds like someone who doesn't want to face me at Double or Nothing. So she's sort of alluding to Willow there, of course, as well. She's putting the entire women's division on notice. She'll be watching Hart and Willow's Nightingale match at Dynasty. And there's a price to pay when you mess with Mercedes Money.
Much better, this, I thought.
Yeah.
Much better. Not a seminal promo or anything like that. But for the longest time, basically our entire AEW career, which again, let's have some perspective. It's not really gone on very long. It's not been great, but it's not gone on very long. This is the first time where it didn't feel like she was doing a media interview on TV. If I'm just excited about wrestling, everyone, that's what you say in the media. On TV, you need to film direction, character, blah, 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 blah. Maybe it's just a cheat code of bitch.
Maybe.
Maybe it is, but I thought this promo should felt dialed in. It felt like she was a part of it, not just, oh, I'm here and I'm happy. It felt like she was integrated into storylines and had a reason to be there.
I like that she mentioned, she was like specific about, well, Julia Hart turns the lights off, so to you. It's not going to make that character feel thick when we all kind of know it's not Julia Hart.
It's Indy Hartwell.
It's Indy Hart. It's Chris Statlander. But it's not going to make, like Mercedes Money is going to be surprised by that. And if you thread it back, it's actually quite nice plotting because straight away when she arrived, she was pleased to meet Chris Statlander as a way to pie Willow Nightingale. So instantly there's a trust. So she's not thinking of Chris Statlander. And she's thinking now of Julia Hart. So that's the payoff. And Mercedes Money is not an idiot for not looking in that direction. So mapping it back, it does actually make one of those like ostensibly nothing segments mean a little bit more.
Well, you mentioned the mystery attacker because then we got Adam Copeland and Willow Nightingale versus Julia Hart and Brody King. Copeland makes his entrance and then we cut backstage and Willow Nightingale has been attacked as well. Who is this mystery attacker?
It's Chris Statlander.
Okay. But she was there checking on Willow Nightingale. So how's that work?
Yeah, oh, good point. Back to the drawing board we go.
So Copeland's like, oh, bloody hell, what am I going to do now? And the lights go out, and then they come back up. Julia Hart's on the ramp. Brody King's just there and attacks Copeland. That's the most terrifying thing I can imagine when the lights come back on. Brody King just coming at you. He gets him on a chair at ringside, does that sandwich against the barricade to take us to break. When we come back, Copeland's fighting back. He hits an Impaler DDT. King kicks out of that. Hits a blockbuster out of the corner. Goes for the spear, but King just takes his head off with a lariat. King missed a cannonball. Willow Nightingale has recovered. She storms down to the ring and makes the tag. Hits a crossbody off the second onto King. We talked a little bit about this. It's going to be awesome when she hits a move on Brody in there.
Cannonball ruled as well.
Yeah. Yeah, Hart bailed. King gets hit with a Copeland spear and a cannonball by Nightingale. Then, as all this is going on, Hart pops back in. Nails Nightingale with the chain-wrapped punch, which the ref misses. Copeland's fighting with King out to the floor, and Hart puts the Heartless on. Nightingale is already unconscious, and they get the victory.
It's weird, this, right? Because I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, fine. It's fine. They're doing the right things in the right order. Mm-hmm. Copeland is attempting, on several occasions, to get Brody King off his feet. Feels like I'm teaching a 9-year-old son how the structure of a big man, little man match works by describing this to the listeners by saying, you know, the longer it takes to do that, the more you put over Brody King as his threat, blah, blah, blah.
Big man class at the performance center.
Yeah, yeah. But my God, this audience, not many there, mm-hmm. but they all went nuts for the Copeland comeback. And I don't know if they just really like him or if it was paced particularly well, but there was just like a switch went off. And I'm thinking, this is like a really good performance from Copeland. I've watched this again in my life. I might not even remember it in about 3 months, but I was just struck by how much. Yeah. I think even Tony Schiavone was like, what? You listen to these, they're going nuts, you know what I mean? Yeah. I think it was just, maybe it was just.
It's Brody King's for real. That's why he pierces the veneer of the silliness of the House of Black in a way that he almost shouldn't be part of it because he's so scary. To your point about like, oh not him. If I'm going to be on my own, not him. That I think like, I love watching these Copeland. Love's too strong. I really enjoy watching Copeland versus these randomers. This is the kind of run I think I want him to have. Penta, that's a bit odd.
Yeah.
And doing the Penta spots, like, and then he's taking the chair one. Like, old frail Adam Copeland taking that spot. Brody King's a monster. It's, I think there's a magic to Brody King that really helped this very formulaic.
Yeah.
Like, Edge has got to stop the big guy. This didn't feel like the week.
Copeland's facials were really good as well.
It didn't feel like the week where you need to praise him and Christians. They're just generals, man.
Yeah, yeah.
They do the dark arts. Well, the dark arts is a very bright light art of like protect the big man's aura.
Yeah.
And Brody King protects it himself.
I think Copeland's facials here were really impressive as well. He had that look of, I just knocked him off the feet. Did I do that?
Two things. Number one, I read a thing on X about like, do you know how you get abs like Christian and Adam Copeland? I was like, yeah, obviously. Summer's coming around. They're like planking. I was like, oh, cool. So that's not happening.
Summer. So I give myself 2 months.
Yeah. And also, I like the trifecta of people who make the audience bark really loudly. Bron Breakker, Brody King, Willow Nightingale.
Yep.
There you go. Anyway, after the match, Mercedes storms down to the ring with a chair. Hart bails. Monet's like, I might just twat Willow with this, to be honest. But she looks at Copeland, chucks it away. It's a nice moment, shaking Adam Copeland's hand. And commentary remind us she's not over Willow breaking her ankle last year.
A good week for the character.
Yeah.
Renee Paquette's backstage with world champion Samoa Joe. He says Swerve's more of a nuisance than a worthy adversary. He keeps putting Strickland in the dirt and then he keeps rising up. He's more of a punching bag than a future world champion. He wasn't happy, or Paquette mentioned about Swerve holding up the title, and he's like, ugh, yeah, I had to have it disinfected last week. We all know Prince Nana's been. But he calls Swerve a choke artist who always comes close to winning the big one but comes up short, and history's going to repeat itself at Dynasty. Joe's going to cement his legacy as the greatest AEW champion of all time. Strickland's a choke artist, but at Dynasty, Joe's going to choke him out.
Swerve Strickland is a former AEW World Tag Team Champion.
I was thinking that, yeah.
I hate this. This is not what AEW does, if nothing else. All Elite Wrestling is like almost too strict with its own continuity. You know what I mean? Like, there's been various examples where it's like, well, if you remember 2.5 years ago, these two wrestlers...
Tony Khan does, because he calls it like that.
Yeah. These two wrestlers were odds, and that's why we're doing a rematch and all the rest of, like, the...
Yeah.
I like this, right?
More of the women's four-way.
Yeah. Yes. I like this. But this incredibly... Oh, yeah. I like you have it. John Moxley versus 10 feud. That's weird how you just... Like, every little thing's usually maybe over-considered. And then you're telling this promo to sell your big title fight, and you're saying, oh, he's a choke artist. He's a former world champion. Even Swerve.
Was that not, choke artist, was that not to feed into Swerve's whole deal about, like, it's been a year, like, the stuff I've experienced in the last year. I know that.
What about the year before?
Yeah. I felt like one was designed for the other, but maybe this wasn't ideal, because this was the first week I thought that maybe Joe's going to win.
You better bloody not.
At no point have I considered in this build that Swerve's going to lose. Mm. And then this week, have they put, like, this choke element of it has never come up. And Swerve being like, I was in a coffin, somebody else has drank my blood. It's been a time.
Yeah,
like,
he's got a chain, so he's a choke artist, and that's going to feed into the finish on Sunday.
I hope so.
Like, he's winning.
Better. We sort of get a video package highlighting the FTR Young Bucks match.
Sorry, just on that. You might have planted a seed with me here as well. Is one transitional champion not better than two? Like,
there's two transitional champions here.
Yeah, and like Joe having it to put over Ospreay and just think, oh God, this is less than ideal. You transition to somebody that's already destined to lose it. That's crap.
We've got two. The whole point is when we've done in the past podcasts of, right, it's finally Paige's moment, or Kenny's finally got the belt and now he's opened up a Forbidden Door to Impact. And you think, well, it's obviously going to be Paige. Who can you have matches with, blah, 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 in the meantime? And with Paige, it was like, well, that's the story's done. Who does he possibly lose a title to? Or MGF or whatever? With Swerve, it's like, oh, spray it all in. You know what I mean?
And that plus that has made me, what if they just run with Joe? Like, what if they're mindful of that and being like, you know what, Swerve? Your time will come, but it's like a sort of a really warped version of the Cody Rhodes WrestleMania 39 thing. We'll get you there again. But not right now.
It's just, I tell you one thing as well, before we get to the Swerve response, because we've kind of covered it here. This is, again, another problem with the contrasts. This is not Flair, Dusty. This is not Austin McMahon. This is two heels who, more often than not, in their AEW careers, have displayed heel traits and bad guy characteristics that the audience just happens to think are cool. And it's just like, just because people chant Swerve's house, and people like immensely respect his work, that doesn't mean that I'm engaged with him as a character. It's the same thing we've pointed out quite a few times now. He's done awful things, but people like him, so whatever.
It's the E-Fed thing where you script your own thing. He might be a 6'5" badass that killed a guy in prison, but he's actually got a heart of gold.
Yeah.
And you can't have all of it. Like, you've got to have traits, and you've got to...
It's just like, they've never really, for me, gave me a reason to really root for Swerve other than he is good at his craft. They're all good at their craft. Some of them are bad guys and good guys. And again, there's no real contrast between the two. And
I want him to win as Swerve Strickland, but as the character of Swerve, I'm like, yeah.
Well done for getting a pay rise in your job.
Yeah.
Not, I want this character to win the title, finish the story, whatever. Like that,
this very much feels like the World Heavyweight Title program when the WWE Universal title exists, except there isn't a Universal title. I'm not making any sense of that.
Yeah, I get it, yeah.
Distinctly B. And another thing that horrified me when I'm watching this, right, is so you've got two tweeners who aren't necessarily good guys or have these rooting characteristics or whatever, and they are basically yet again regurgitating the premise of this program by saying, oh, you're a choke artist, I don't think you're a champion. Well, au contraire, it is my destiny to be the champion, and I've heard this week after week after week. It's giving Capital Wrestling Center. Do you know what I mean? It is.
This has been the worst one I can remember from in terms of a title program. It's been that premise re-establishment thing.
It's right, so there. Be this. This is not an AEW World title program. It just isn't. And it's meant to be the biggest thing on the show.
Yeah, let's quickly mention the Swerve thing that came after the Jericho segment. Paquette's there with Swerve. She says, oh no, Strickland asked Paquette if she thinks he's a choke artist. She says no. And he says, yeah, I've always fallen forward into success, as you mentioned. He said, been a bit of a year, I've fallen into a coffin, been stapled, my body's been thrown into barbed wire, I've been knocked in the face with a chain, but I always get back up. It's my military upbringing. You can call me anything you want, Joe, but this Sunday, you'll be calling me the new AEW World Champion. And he takes his jacket off, looks in the camera, and he says, and I'll tell you why I'm so confident later on tonight.
Yeah.
Just feels B to me, but we'll see.
As I said, yeah, there was a sort of video package following the Joe promo.
B's good. I'm not giving it an F. B's good. It's just distinctly not A. And I think everyone who says it's A, or that Swerve is undisputedly the man, I think they're deluding themselves.
B-E-W, because you know ball. Ball Elite Wrestling.
Shut up.
So yeah, they half show the FTR Young Bucks package for Dynasty when Matthew and Nicholas Jackson tell Tony Khan, who sat right there with him, yeah, get rid of this. It's not, we don't like it. We'll put it up on social media and cut out FTR.
Have they done that before? You never tell with Dax. But they've done it before, and he was like, oh, I should have showed the real thing. And then it was just before the all-in one.
Yeah. So the long version.
And it was like, it didn't make Dax look quite so much of a prick. He's actually really good in the social media one. But again, it's like, are these just stupid games that they play to try and fool the marks? And I just don't care.
I enjoyed this.
I did enjoy this as a riff on that. You can tell Dax would be like, okay, if you must.
I noticed that I lose promo time for you getting more promo time. Do the math, Matthew.
Nicholas said they're going to beat up FTR's buddy Daniel Garcia and Kazuchika Okada called Pac a dead man, and they walk off and call for their elevator entrance.
Nice, good. Yeah, good
touches. They like the little details. Mm.
And then we got Okada and the Bucks versus Pac, Penta El Zero, Miedo, and Daniel Garcia. It looked like we were going to start with Pac and Okada. But
every trios match ever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have to do it, I guess.
The Bucks.
Do they?
what trios matches?
No. If there's like a trios match or a tag, which is principally designed to show you a glimpse, but not too much, of an interaction between the two main characters who are going to have a big singles match. In every AEW match I've seen of this, they do that tease. Do they have to do it every single time? I think it's getting a little bit... Meh.
Yeah.
Really, really like this match, but yes. It was just a thought.
No, it's that a bit like that, how like some wrestlers would say you have to do the lockdown, like drop down, tackle spot to get going, and you obviously don't. And
yes.
Even matches are more energized by them starting differently. Yeah, I would say that's one of them spots that could
maybe give it a rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because the Bucks jump him. Eventually, Garcia made the tag, ran wild.
Yeah, and nobody at this point is going, what? They're going to start with this?
Yeah.
Like, nobody.
Yeah, said, nah.
Yeah. He rubs his knob in Nicholas's face after the corner punches. Garcia gets sent to the floor.
Did you sanction that?
eats a running kick from Nicholas. We go to break. I'm going to say something now. It's going to sound like I'm burying AEW, and I'm not. I'm giving it.
You probably are.
Great phrase. Got some TNA vibes from what came next, but the best version of TNA. Matthew getting the house mic and running commentary whilst he beats the crap out of Daniel Garcia. And then he said, come on, show us why we hired you. And then he got him up for like a stalling back suplex. He's like, all right, you made your point. Put me down. What do you think of that before we move on, actually?
I like it.
Yeah.
I've always, it's like, obviously Matthew Jackson's not The Rock, but I'm always a mark for intra-match commentary where it's The Rock, Booker T.
Lawler was good at it.
Yeah, Lawler. Yeah. I just enjoy it immensely.
Yeah, I like it.
I was worried he was going to go on, and I was like, just stop, and then they do the backstories, and that was the last of it. That was really good.
And I'll tell you what, go on.
Pat came in, massive moonsault off the top onto the Bucks on the outside, stares Okada down. Okada waits, Nicholas attacks, triple team corner attack, air raid crash, Penta breaks the count though. He comes in, flying off the top, crossbody onto Okada, sling blades on the Bucks, made in Japan, gets a two count on Okada. It all breaks down. Pac flies in with a slingshot core on Matthew and finally goes face to face with Okada. Go back and forth. There's a thrust kick to Okada. Pac goes up top and Nicholas sweeps out his legs. Paul Turner was just looking at Garcia at that point for some reason. But Garcia makes the tag, runs straight into an Okada dropkick. Gets out of the tombstone, though. Jackknife pin gets two. But he runs into a corner kick from the Bucks. Tombstone from Okada. Penta eats one as well. Then super kicks from the Bucks. And a huge rainmaker. We were talking about this in the office earlier. From Okada on Garcia. Gets the 1-2-3. And then they really beat the crap out of him afterwards. He eats an EVP trigger afterwards. They bring a ladder in. They slam him into it. I was like, hey, all right, he's suffered enough. They put him in the ladder. It was like Matthew's going to dive off the top when Pac runs in with the ring bell hammer, which is obviously a lovely callback to their best of seven series.
Yeah, absolutely. I really, really enjoyed this. And on the commentary thing, I noticed that this is a bit more immediate and lively than some of the recent Young Bucks TV matches where they've tried to do a methodical, we're heels now and we're corporate and this is the way it's meant to be done sort of style, which I don't know. I like that in theory, but there's an expectation of like real excitement in a Young Bucks match and maybe there was a conflict there. I don't know. But instead of doing that this time, they had a different way of trying to build the heat, and that was with Matthew Jackson being incredibly obnoxious. And I just love the idea of an upper management figure just having the hubris to think they can do everything.
Yeah.
And you've seen these people in your lives a million times, and he can't commentate, and he made a fool of himself. It was really cathartic.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that. Elsewhere, I think maybe they gave too much to Garcia in that sort of, we have to do it this way, it's Dynamite. Do you? Like, am I going to get convinced that, oh, well, Garcia's pushed odds now because look at what how they protected him in this trios match. It's not, I don't know, I just felt a little bit like
a trade-off because they were pinning him, maybe?
Maybe, but it just felt, it's this increasingly obligatory way that they do things. And maybe in terms of ratio of offense, not to be, you know, pro wrestling sheet about it.
Yeah.
But like, it can get a little bit, what's the point really of doing this? But at the same time, the way that they had Pac operate in this match was just immense. Like, the Young Bucks are these days saving their bums. I thought it was a really nice contrast in this one. They didn't. Pac was just killing them.
Yeah.
The Germans looked unbelievable. They were flailing about. They looked like they were getting ruined by Pac. The way Pac just jumped into the ring for the cutter as well. Basically, this accomplished everything it needed to. The Bucks made Pac, who needs no help in this regard because he's incredible, just look like this killer who could just beat you at his whim incredibly easily with his crisp futuristic offense. And then the second that he got a little bit close to Okada, the Bucks were like, that's our investment, swipe the leg or whatever. But they did a really, really good job of the only story this needed to tell.
Yeah, I thought this was great for Pac and Okada because I love watching Okada's aloofness obscure his cowardice.
Yeah.
He's really, like, he does a lot with his face. Probably underrated in that regard because he's so good at everything else that as a newly minted American TV wrestler, he's cracked that straight away. He would normally only get to do that within the body of his big matches, but now he's going to get to do it in, like, little bits with Pac, and he'll do this more and more with the Elite, obviously, the longer he stays heel, because he's going to have to bring his A game. There's no interference, you know, it's the match is going to be held up as a mano-a-mano one-on-one against Pac. He's going to have to beat him honourably, if he can, you know, maybe a low blow behind the ref's back or whatever. And I thought the match just, like, nicely sort of played that card with the moment where Pac kind of almost scared Okada and then the Bucks were protecting him. But then you give Okada that really emphatic finish. He didn't do it to Pac, but he shows he can do it if he has to. And I thought that was like a nice detail. The Garcia thing is the... it's when you're trying to serve multiple masters.
Yeah.
He got as much as he got because that's them thinking, oh, perfect. That was like tick, 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 tick. But in reality, I don't think it played quite as well as we wanted it to. But the finish I thought was superb.
Yeah, Garcia looked like he'd genuinely been messed up.
Yeah.
I thought his selling was awesome.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Right, it's time for a Taz to broker a meeting between Chris Jericho and Hook. I'm not sure if I've alluded to this earlier, but I hated this. Taz is already in the ring. Jericho comes out to Lionheart. He gets booed. Hook gets big cheers, obviously. And he says, Taz does, that he's just there to make sure things go nice and easy. And he gives the floor to Chris Jericho, who says, last week, Shibata was just collateral damage. Hook wasn't listening to me as much as he should have. He bangs on about the learning tree. Talks about all the people who listen to his pearls of wisdom. MJF, Orange Cassidy, Eddie Kingston, John Moxley, Will Ospreay. Everyone who's entered the Jericho Vortex has left better on the other side. He wants to get to the top.
This is NXT 2021. I have nothing to say. Yeah. Sorry, not 2.0. CWC NXT. I have nothing
across
to
the desk.
If you viscerally hate it, like, I share your feelings, but I can't articulate them anymore in this job we're privileged to do. Like, you're saying these things, these Jericho things, and you know where all of it's going, and if another frigging Jericho match sneaks onto a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I'm not angry. I look at it and I feel nothing. It's a piss take, and that's about as much as I can get, like, riled up by it.
It felt like a game where Jericho was trying to say every phrase or word that he's just...
Trademarked,
yeah.
Dumb arsehole.
So we got Learning Tree here, Jericho Vortex... He wants Hook to get to the top of Wizard Mountain and breathe the rarefied air of Jericho. And Hook says, no, I don't need your help. Jericho says, don't be stupid. Taz tries to intervene, but Jericho's like, shut up. I'm doing something you should have done 30 years ago and give this kid some guidance. Taz keeps trying to interject. Jericho said Hook's had people telling him he's a future world champion. You're not as good as you think you are. Taz tries stepping again, and Jericho puts his hands on him, shoves him down. Excalibur tells us that Taz has been dealing with knee issues. The crowd chant, you effed up at Chris Jericho. And Hook goes over and grabs Jericho by the collar, pushes him into the corner, saying, I'll show you how good I am anytime, anywhere. Get out of my ring. And Jericho slowly leaves. Sort of, it looks like maybe he'll double back and jump Hook, but he doesn't. And he heads up the ramp.
Fair's fair. The use of Taz here I thought was effective. If you want to be completely strict about things and listen to the reaction of the crowd, that is the most a crowd has vocally cared about Chris Jericho or something he's done in quite some time. But it was a cheat code. People just love Taz.
Yeah.
It's a barely legal cheat code because people love Chris Jericho stuff when it involves Taz or Sabu.
Yeah. with AEW, never miss like Dynamite, Collision or a pay-per-view Rampage. I don't watch it in double speed. I make sure to watch absolutely everything. I get up earlier than I would for most other programs just to be a completionist about it. If I did not do this job for a living, I would absolutely fast forward through everything Chris Jericho does, knowing with 100% certainty that I just don't care and will miss out on anything. And even if I was like still scrolling X or whatever, and someone said, oh, fair play to Jericho, that was better than I was expecting, I just wouldn't care. The guy is so far, is falling so far from where he was as Le Champion.
Yeah.
That's the only bit of catharsis is that, well, you've it. You have completely and utterly f***ed it through your own arrogance and your just refusal to not be Chris Jericho. Well done. It'd be the comeback of be the greatest comeback of all time if he can get as over as he was as Le Champion, and I'm not overstating things at all. It's inconceivable that people will hold an interest in Chris Jericho ever again. Inconceivable. Unless he...
goes away.
Even then.
I think it's unless he goes back to the Fed. People have nostalgia for the old music, for the old presentation. Triple H will absolutely bury him creatively because they hate each other.
That's got to be at the back of his mind.
Yeah.
It's like, got to be in the back
of
his mind.
I need a crowd that loves me again, and they'll pop for the music, they'll pop for the countdown.
Here's the thing as well, right, okay. I would never put anyone words in anyone's mouth or anything like that, but it's just my thoughts, and I don't know how Tony Khan feels. If you're Tony Khan, deep down, you're a bit spineless, we know this, a bit feckless. All right, I don't think it's a good idea, you can do it. He himself has said that he's done this in the past, and he can see it all over the TV show to this day. He must be thinking, oh, God, this sucks. this sucks, this is not good, it's not effective, but I have to do it because he's on this much money and he's powerful and it's almost awkward not to. I don't know if that's the case. That's what I think anyway. Surely Khan can't be particularly happy with how this is all panning out with Chris Jericho. Surely Chris Jericho, you can tell from the trademarks and the vortex, he knows, he must feel it. He's a wrestler. He's a thin-skinned lunatic. WWE want him, just go.
Yeah.
Go.
Tony, like, it feels like, remember when, like, he's kind of as beloved as he was and how that team were well-liked by neutrals, how Arsene Wenger got that reputation for, I didn't see it. Like, Arsenal were cheating.
Yes.
Yeah, considered, like, purveyors of the beautiful game. I didn't see that one. Like, it feels like Tony Khan must go to the toilet when he was fighting, like, Adam Cole at Double or Nothing or this segment or anything from the last year and a half. Oh, wait, I was in the toilet.
Yeah.
What did Jericho go to? I'll catch it later. Anyway, back, headset back on. I'm watching the show again. Is that what he's not in front of the monitor for? He must watching this too.
This wasn't a revelation this week, obviously. It's been coming for quite a few weeks. And we literally said yesterday, this Dynasty card looks great.
Right.
But don't, Jericho versus Hook's going to get added.
Don't really need to add any more matches. They added a couple more on this show. I think the trios match, the 3-on-3, sorry, is a 0-hour match. But regardless, we'll talk about that in a second. When he first started doing this with Hook, which was what, a maximum of 6 weeks ago, I thought, you know what, fair play. He's gone, I'm going to get myself on Double or Nothing with this, but I'll take a step back and we'll do some. Maybe we'll have a tag match on the pay-per-view, but generally it would. They've just expedited this and just gone, Dynasty match for the FTW title.
I don't get the story either. Why does he care about Hook's progression?
He's going to win the belt and rename it the Y2J title or something dumb like that, and Taz is going to be affronted that his belt has been, you know. Like,
GFY title.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Wait a second. Is this? No. Then we had the Swerve Renee bit following this. And then it was time for Deonna Purrazzo versus Mariah May, who comes out with Tony Storm's thing, of course. And Purrazzo thwarts her early on. Knee lift, armbar, May bails to the floor, and Storm saves May with from a baseball slide. That allows Mariah May to take over, slams Purrazzo into the barricade, and gets her back inside. And then she sends her back outside to take us to a break. When we come back, May hits a big forearm, tries to charge again, but Purrazzo hits an overhead throw into a submission. May gets to the ropes. Purrazzo hits a pump kick for a near fall. But May floats over a powerbomb attempt, sends Purrazzo into the corner and hits Sweet Cheek Music. She got a 2-count off a spinning DDT, wanted Mayday, but Purrazzo rolled her up and got the flash pin 1-2-3. Storm immediately hits the ring afterwards to attack Deonna. Thunder Rosa makes the save, just clobbering Luther. That was a nice bump. Gets into with Tony Storm and Mariah May, but Deonna gets into her face saying she didn't need her help. Mariah May gets Deonna out there, pulls her to the floor. Storm tries for Storm Zero, but Rosa escapes, puts her in the camel clutch and smears lipstick all over her face, whilst Tony Schiavone says that's not even Tony Storm's colour.
Representation matters. We talked about this, even when WWE does quite a bad job of booking the majority of women on Raw and SmackDown. The fact that they're there and there's a presence gives people an opportunity to get over. And that's what's happening in AEW's women's division at the moment. Like, I know the mixed tag doesn't qualify to break the ladies' night curse, but they're on television, there's different stories going on, and this division does feel deeper and more people feel involved. And I think you have to pay compliments to how it isn't just the champion has come out, he's the challenger this month. There are a lot more ancillary characters. I don't necessarily think a good job is being done with all of them, truthfully. And I say that because I think it's the second week in a row where Mariah May is in a feature match, which they're telling you there, care about this woman, the push is coming, the moment with Tony Storm is coming, whatever. And the match hasn't been great. Loved Mariah May when she first came in. Didn't think the Anjay one was that strong last week, and I thought this one was worse. There was a, botches happen, it's fine. But there was a point where they, slipped out of the powerbomb spot.
Fell over, basically.
And it was all of a sudden that,
And then Pratt had to, back herself into the turnbuckle for the hip attack.
And that's a flashpoint and a moment of a test of how over the characters are, how much the fans are going to let them crack on. And then that 1 second feels like a lifetime, and then you kind of lift it out of it and the whole deal. So I just didn't think it was a particularly great night for Mariah May, who was in the featured spot because she's already proven that she is somebody to go with. I'm not losing investment in her. It just wasn't a particularly good week. I'm not hugely invested. They're doing all the right things with Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm as well, but I'm not at the point where I think Thunder Rosa is a threat. I think, like Deonna Purrazzo, they've done another good job of setting up a challenger who will 100% lose.
Yes.
Which is a stride forward. Definitely, definitely, definitely.
After Double or Nothing, I could easily see them putting two women's matches on Dynamite if they want to.
I think we're there. I can see the end of Ladies' Night. I can see the end of this constant and fair complaint. However, it's another month where all of this groundwork has been done to build up a loser rather than a winner.
They've signposted either the finish of Dynasty or the turn, what the next B-level program in the women's division is. This match was just there. And Deonna Purrazzo, I'm torn because on one hand, yes, she does some customary stuff on the mat, but she doesn't really wrestle technical matches. They just very quickly turn into just 8-minute back and forths, gobbled up by an advert break.
The holds themselves are impressive.
Yeah, that's...
Let's get to the visually impressive move rather than building to it.
Yeah, it's just not proper technical wrestling matches that she gets to do on TV, and that's what she's good at. So she's getting, misrepresented, which is not good. And she's just not good at a normal TV match. She's had one good match. It's Tyra Valkyrie Soraya effect. Come in, fanfare, name, or you got something about you, and then getting exposed by not being meeting that AEW in-ring standard, sadly. Like not as good as like Ishida or a Storm or a Deeb or an Aminata. So I just don't know what we're doing here. It's not good professional wrestling.
Before we move on,
booking, in-ring, not good. I just cannot get moved by it at all.
Before we move on, we have to get to the name of the game. Before we get to the name of the game, though, we have to get to the aim of the game.
Aim of the game is to identify to the hour, minute, and second the first time you hear the first note for the first entrance scene for the first woman to appear for the only women's match on Dynamite, with the idea being that they took it away. The idea that it's not a passion project. The idea that they feel like they have to do it because it's 2024. And that is the thought process. It just doesn't feel like this lovingly crafted thing. It's an obligation. And we jingleize AEW's thoughts on booking women's wrestling for now, hopefully. And that jingle is, hey, guys, don't worry. When the women come out to play, the main event ain't too far away. So that's a jingle with the idea being that you'll get an important men's match after this. Just stick through this obligation for the optics. That's the aim of the game.
I'm like so excited for this.
And I hadn't thought about it. And the name of the game is... Boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. Let me hear you say, ladies, night.
The out here, sisters.
Have to really...
See, I told you.
I reckon if I sat down and do it, I could do it. One and only... Women's match. That was good. Yeah, I can do more only stuff. What's a song with only in the title?
I've got that in my head. You've got
If Only by Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah. Yes.
Only the Lonely by Roy Orbison.
Only the one.
There you women's go. Match. Ricochet's old theme. One and only. Women's match.
Yeah, I'll get it next week. Don't worry.
Could do two a week, don't forget now. Preview and review.
Yeah, I hate it.
I love how you landed on Boom by the Out Here Brothers. It's not got the word in. Your musical Rolodex is vast, and I know this, and I love that you've gone to basically a Top of the Pops I watched 3 weeks ago.
It was one of the first singles I ever bought.
Yeah.
Well, one of the first songs.
Advisory sticker on
there. Like, Don't Stop Wiggle Wiggle.
And that was rude too.
That was dirty, that was.
Yeah. It was not about
your
dancing.
Ass on my face.
Yeah, it was not. You thought it was about dancing.
I love
not.
The way your pussy. Yeah. Out here, brothers. Good.
Yeah. Thanks as always to the Panda Blair himself, Adam Blair, at Adam Wilton 4, and Jose Palomares at the Hole 11. Always take care of the this sort of thing. Michael Sidgwick, it's very rare. We've not done this for ages. Can you give us the guesses we gave?
I'll never learn.
I don't know. Never gonna learn.
I'll never learn. I'm gonna do a spreadsheet after this of the songs I could do. I'm in descending order. Sorry for the flat tone. It's experience.
It's like you doing a wrestling culture one. Like he does one by YouTube, but you've got to get through the whole first verse.
That's your wrestling culture. Stacks has to come up with six jokes each
week.
What's
I got
to do
here?
No, I'm saying
right.
We've all got jobs to do.
Clothing. Hamlet, 1 hour 15:10. Me, 1 hour 19:19. Adam Wilborn, I don't know you from Adam. 1 hour 23 flat.
Adam Wilton says 1 hour 6 minutes 14 seconds. Dr. Fed back on top this week. Michael Havlock moves on to 4 correct guesses of the year. I've got 3. Sidge 0 so far.
It's a fair-brained guess because I knew they'd do the go-home segment.
Yes,
they do like good. That now.
Rene Paquette's backstage with Switchblade Jawad and the guns. She's not very excited to be around the Bing Bing gang, and he says, cheer up. He says, we've been having a blast these past few months, and we're going to fulfill our destiny at Dynasty. The Acclaimed and Daddy Ass have what they want. It's the AEW Trios titles versus the ROH six-man titles at Dynasty, winner take all. And then the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass respond to that, saying, it's nice to know your intentions are finally now clear. They accept the challenge. I got a bit confused, Sige, because Bowen's talked about having his own gold bat for them to choke on.
I think he's talking about his cock.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense. Caster called him Twink Blade, and they're going to have a tag match on Collision, the Acclaimed versus the Guns.
Why?
In the quest for a one-liner, did Billy Gunn allude to beating his kids?
Yes.
What? I've been beating your ass for 30 years. What?
He said, Jay White, I whooped your ass the other week. I was like, don't remind people about that one. And then, he said, I've been beating the Guns' asses for years.
He does not represent any of the Dudley Boys.
No.
It's not on.
So you got Daddy Ass saying that, Max Caster just losing what's left of his mind. Poor Anthony Bones.
Yeah.
Poor Anthony Bones. I mean, he might be a prick as well, but he does a way better job of hiding it.
Yeah. What do you think?
I hate everyone likes the Acclaimed. Well, I don't, Doug.
All this, no offense, to build to a zero-hour match tells you all you really
Everyone's coming around.
Are they going to unify the belts, Cinco, or is it just like carrying around six belts? Because the trios, you either fold the AEW trios belts into the weekly Ring of Honor thing and make them Ring of Honor six-man, or Ring of Honor just doesn't have a trios division anymore. I imagine that somebody cared about either of those scenarios. Yeah, and nobody does. My fault.
Just be quiet and get to the next thing.
Okay. What came next?
Imagine the Acclaimed and Swerve in our glory. Can we all just be quiet and move on?
Yes. Yes.
Orange Cassidy versus Shane Taylor. Shane Taylor joined, of course, by Lee Moriarty and Anthony Ogogo. Great to see him back. Excalibur ruled out all of Orange Cassidy's mates, basically. Shibata's in Japan. Rocky Romero's in Mexico. Chuck Taylor's injured. And Torrent Brett is an arsehole.
What about Keith Lee?
Orange Cassidy's friends with him.
I've written, Cassidy is all alone with no friends. What have I written there? Cassidy
in tag team partner.
Cassidy is left alone with no friends other than the million tag partners he's had, of course.
Keith Lee, El Hijo del Vikingo, Hook,
Danhausen,
Shibata.
Shibata's in Japan.
They covered off Shibata. Yeah.
Everyone he teamed with that all in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wasn't in, already in the best friend. So Penta,
yeah.
Eddie Kingston,
yeah.
He's had loads.
No mates though. Cassidy early on obviously puts his hands in his pockets, drop kicks, kip ups, tries a spinning
Bandido.
DDT gets caught by the Tower London stunner. Taylor takes the ref. Moriarty attacks on the outside. And a big chop from Taylor Shane Taylor takes us to a break. We come back. Cassidy fires up. But again, Taylor takes the ref and the numbers game catches up to Cassidy. Taylor blocked a DDT, but got hit with the Stundog Millionaire. Two dives from Cassidy takes out Ogogo and Moriarty. Taylor ducked the orange punch, hit him with a big lariat for a two count, and avoided the beach break. But in the end, Cassidy hit an orange punch. Taylor fires back, and then we get like a home run orange punch from Orange Cassidy. Gets the 1-2-3. Post-match, Moriarty and Ogogo just dive straight in there, batter him. Ogogo hits that left hand to the gut, crumples Cassidy. Taylor's going to take him out. Christopher Daniels and Matt Sydal try to make the save, but Trent Barrett is there to take him out with chair shots, and they just lay out Cassidy. Border City stretch from Moriarty, and they drape their flag over him.
I tell you what, there was one moment in this match where I think, bloody hell, Orange Cassidy, you're still great.
Mm-hmm.
Where he twisted out of some kind of suplex to drill him with a Stundog Millionaire. Thought it was like, you've just paced that,
mm-hmm.
and I just got an actual pop out of me because I didn't expect that to happen. Just proper babyface smarts, that took me aback. I just had problems with the booking here, like the amount of times AEW run this kind of match to do this kind of post-match angle. It's like you've at some point maybe start thinking of advancing your stories in a different way. And this is just so dynamite in every which way. You've got a predictable winner, mm-hmm. wins predictable match, which basically serves as a backdrop to do a post-match. There's got to be different ways of telling stories because this just left me a little bit uninspired. And another thing as well, we have just established Shane Taylor Promotions as being a new and improved unit. Mm-hmm. And they've gone, they've won one and then they've lost two. What's the point in them then? You know what I mean? Like, I reckon, even if it's as corny in North American episodic TV as Trent interferes after Cassidy just thwarts the interference of a Go-Go and Moriarty. Oh, he didn't count for Trent on his lost. Can you just start beating people every now and then? Because there's... So Shane Taylor loses the match, and then after the post-match, Excalibur says, well, Shane Taylor Promotions are really making a name for themselves here. It's like, Shane Taylor literally just lost.
I have the exact same feeling here because I really enjoyed Shane Taylor Promotions, and I was thinking, you know, like his omnipresence and this redefined Shane Taylor Promotions thing has worked.
It's one of those easy cheat codes, got a new member, oh, it could be good now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It didn't matter how many times it lost.
Love getting to see a Go-Go back in a prominent position and being like protected as he is at the moment. So I got a really good feeling around this group, and I had that same thing. I was like, you have to decide if you are still the wins and losses promotion or not, mm-hmm. because if you are, you have Shane Taylor win here, and it only needs to be like a one-off for Orange Cassidy, an unexpected defeat because he's lost all his friends. The story even suits it.
Exactly.
The story suits it, but you still bottled it. It's not on the level of, well, Kingston got a measure of revenge here tonight when he put Jericho through the table after barbed wire. It's not that, right? And I think it's because it's undercard. In the contrast to not really feeling a great deal for Joe and Swerve, I was quite like, and because I like this Trent Orange Cassidy thing, so I'm like, oh, this is a good undercard fair. Like, I like all these new acts, but I just really wanted them to go all the way and have Shane Taylor get the win, because that's what AEW at its core was and probably still should be.
Yeah.
And it did leave me a bit hollow after the fact. It's not even that gutsy a call. It was just the right one to make here, and they didn't do it.
I was looking there. I was like, how many times has Shane Taylor or like Shane Taylor Promotions won on either Collision or Dynamite? Obviously, they got the win over Lionhook and Shibata. And beyond that, it's just loss all over the place, especially for Shane Taylor.
But then he got a Go-Go win. It's like, all right, he's the guy who can complete the unit, the missing piece of the puzzle or whatever, and they've just lost again.
And it would be working, I think, otherwise. People have invested in it. You've been told by basically the fact that he's always around to invest in Shane Taylor.
Yes.
But the wins have to start happening because you fans don't
like I'm harboring no illusions here. Like, I know that they are an undercard stable and they're not a main event proposition, and they might not be any plans to ever propel them. To win a little bit.
Yeah.
Otherwise, beating them means nothing.
Yeah. You want to set up someone, I'm not bothered about this, but you want to set up someone for, let's say, the Acclaimed to defend their new Trios Championships against. There you go. But they can't keep losing.
Get the Acclaimed out.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. They show highlights of Roderick Strong turning on Kyle O'Reilly, and I was like, when did this happen? And then I realised they put it on Battle of the Belts. I'm watching that. Because no belts ever change hands on that show. But I am excited for Strong versus Kyle O'Reilly. When they step in the ring at Dynasty, says Roddy, he's going to end Kyle O'Reilly forever.
Speaking of Battle of the Belts, with this getting added, I looked at the full Dynasty card, and I was like, it's still not that intimidating. It could be worse. Don't make it worse on Sunday. It could be worse. 10 matches, 8 title matches. That's a state. That is an absolute state. Yeah. Like, that's Battle of the Belts. It's because everyone's got a belt.
Night of Champions every month.
Yeah.
The main event match came next and lived up to the billing, in my opinion. Will Ospreay versus Claudio Castagnoli. Don Callis on commentary. And like you say, not every match has to be like, right, here we go, lock up. Claudio just charges at him at the bell.
Sorry, yeah. That's not to be it is absolutely fine, I think, for Claudio, even though we know that Ospreay operates differently to the rest of the family. After the events of Saturday, if Claudio's thinking, well, you're one of them, I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yes.
It's just way more messy than it needs to be.
Yeah.
It's one of those where, like, maybe if you unpack it, every little character motivation makes sense, but then it's just not clean. It's not pure and beautiful.
The end of this,
the simplest, like, elegant stories.
I know you're complaining a little bit, Ospreay, but you've had quite a few weeks of this that you could have said, I'm not having this.
And this post-match was ridiculous, but the match was really, really, really good.
Yeah, Ospreay avoids the Ricola Bomb to start, tries a head scissors, gets hit with a big backbreaker from Claudio. Ospreay comes back, Hurricane Rana sends Claudio to the outside. Claudio tried to send Ospreay to the barricade after Ospreay flies out after him, but Ospreay jumps it and hits that big forearm off the barricade. Claudio, when they get back in, cuts off a springboard, targets the ribs, but Ospreay fires back with a multiple revolution head scissors to send Claudio outside, but he catches Ospreay and plants him on the apron, I think to take us to break there. But Ospreay battles back, big kick, another big forearm, some Coada kicks. Ospreay puts him in a sharpshooter, but Claudio pulls out the leg, counters into one of his own.
I've got one for ladies' night next week.
Which gets transitioned into a crossface. They get to their feet. Castagnoli dodges a corkscrew kick, tries a springboard uppercut, but Ospreay hits a thrust kick in midair into a tiger driver for a near fall.
Oh, my God.
Ospreay wanted Stormbreaker, but Claudio gets rushed him in the corner. Well, rushed him to the corner. Eye poke, uppercuts, ripcord lariat, gets a two count. Claudio's pissed off. He catches an Oscar attempt in midair. Almost hits like a burning hammer, basically, for a two. Goes for a big finish, like a big shot, but Ospreay meets him with a Spanish fly. He goes for the hidden blade, but runs into a beautiful pop-up uppercut.
Oh, my God.
And then Claudio goes for the giant, he signals for it, and goes for the giant swing, but Ospreay...
I'm really proud.
Ospreay pulls him up into a tornado DDT and hits a leap of faith for two.
Oh, my God.
That's what we were trying to pitch. What's the... insane counter.
Yeah. How did you do a sit-up when you're in that position? It's imagine doing that.
Anyway, Ospreay here, hidden blade, got the 1-2-3. Afterwards, though, as we mentioned, Powerhouse Hobbs, Takeshita, and Carl Fletcher hit the ring, attack Claudio, throw him into the ring. Throw him out of the ring. Takeshita's going to brainbuster him on the ramp when here comes John Moxley from the crowd. The numbers are against him. He gets into it with Powerhouse Hobbs. Claudio and Takeshita go at it, but Moxley and Claudio... hold their own in the ring, basically. Hobbs tells Moxley, I'll see you next week. Ospreay goes with the Don Fallas family whilst arguing
Don
with...
Fallas.
Don Fallas family. What did you say?
Don Callis family.
Don Fallas.
Don Callis.
That's a good spoonerism because he's a dick.
Don Fallas sounds like one of those like terrible nicknames, like Tiny Con.
Yes.
Don Fallas, more like.
Don Callis family, but he's round with them. And I don't understand why he hasn't split from them already, if I'm honest.
It's like Will Ospreay. I'm going to praise the match to the hilt. I'm just doing a bit of a snarky bit. But after, it's the Don Callis family. Everyone in AEW knows like Don Callis is a prick. The commentators don't even give him the time of day when they're otherwise impartial. It's like, oh, you know, who knows who's behaving like what? And Will Ospreay, after like however many years, like, what are you playing at?
He's the Indy Hartwell of the Don Callis.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Are we the baddies? You know what I mean? Makes sense that Will Ospreay would be...
Of all the people.
Not exactly quick to realise this, but it's still stupid. It's still like adhering to this Don Callis family continuity and being a baby face. Maybe that's a night one of, oh, you think you're bigger than us? You're coming in without us? Oh, we'll kick your ass or whatever.
Is that why the BCC now, they're going to try and position them as baby face? Are they going to do Anarchy in the Arena with like Ospreay as and one night member of the BCC against the family? Double or nothing's coming up, isn't it?
There's only three members of the family.
Yeah, you know, he's somebody else in. Don Carlos can be like, I've had a painting made of you. We're friends. That's pretty much how they do.
So I just want to... I want a clean-up operation of the dynamics, which are completely shot after Dynasty. But for tonight, this is really, really, really good. It's weird. It wasn't Ospreay Takeshita good. And that's kind of the new good standard, the new great standard. However, having said that, if you haven't seen it, obviously this is a shootout where they do the cool moves against each other. Basically what it was. There was some stuff with the ribs being targeted, but that just kind of ebbed away. It just got to the good stuff at the very end. Like, it's one of those where you feel like such a prick when you're watching it. I only lost my mind three times. There was only three times where I thought, how the hell are you doing that? Are you an alien, a magnificent beast? How is it physically possible that you can execute this stuff? Just the three times when in, like, Ospreay Takeshita, it was 10. It's easy to lose perspective, but when this hit, it hit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, think of the... Imagine yourself lying down, right? And how much it takes to get out of bed with our old asses, right? Then imagine Claudio Castagnoli has picked you up, right? I can't even imagine doing a sit-up.
End of sentence.
I can't imagine doing a sit-up. Imagine doing like a sit-up when you're being swung around.
After you've done 10, 15 minutes of exercise.
Yeah. Which is apparently the hardest exercise there is, because they say there's nothing like being in the ring. Mm. You'll just get blown up if you're not in it constantly.
Yeah, imagine that, like you're a baby face. You've done all that and it's like, right now I need to fire up like Usain Bolt, run the 100 metres.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to be the like the hottest and most energised you've ever been.
I mean, this was like, I'm just trying to tell people who might be catching up on Dynamite these days, don't expect Ospreay Takeshita. It wasn't quite that great. This is really, really, really good. And there will be at least two or three times where like, how are you doing that? Like, it's just so impressive.
Yeah, you run out of superlatives watching Will Ospreay as a weekly TV wrestler at this point.
Just that backflip kick as well.
He's we kind of said this with the feeling when he came in, and then it was instantly confirmed by the first couple of matches, and it continues to be. Will Ospreay is a bar-raising professional wrestler in terms of what the normal is becoming for like being the best. And when All Elite Wrestling first launched, you could really hang your hat on All Elite. There were wrestlers on that show that like you weren't going to get in a million years on 2019, 2020 Raw. Like, we're there with Ospreay, not many others, truthfully, at the moment, but we're there with Ospreay. Like, and it's all the more reason why the world title program is difficult when he's not the champion. And for that matter, like, it'll create new tiers of what is like a mid-card and what is an undercard, because if you're going to be in the main event of an AEW show, Ospreay's the bar. Like, and that this is like a weekly television match. This, to Cedric's point, it's not even what he kind of promises you on a pay-per-view, what you are being promised of Dynasty against Bryan. You know, like, it's really exciting, but it's difficult to book around because not many people are doing it like him.
I do get it as well when we have listeners. We do take the critiques on board. When we have listeners say, like, if this was on Raw, you'd lose your mind.
Yep.
And then it's on Dynamite, and my first impulse is, oh, it's not quite as good as the first two Ospreay singles matches as a full-timer in AEW, but it was really, really good. And then I get it, but it's just what you've seen from the promotion for so, so, so goddamn long.
Spoiled. Yeah.
Spoiled is the word, absolutely.
And I think this is where we come back to the criticisms of the Don Callis family and all that, because ultimately a lot of, when you say losing your mind on Raw, you're using this week as an example with something like Zayn and Gable. It's like really deep character investment based on a story that's got a load of logical beats.
And that's
you
not
haven't
this.
Got that with
not
Ospreay that. And the Don Callis family. If you had that, like at some point, by the time Ospreay hits Wembley, it's kind of perfect. It's like perfect, like destination Will Ospreay, because you'll have had all the stuff with the Callis family cleared off. His babyface charge to Wembley will have presumably been booked quite well, and now he's going to have this killer match to win the belt. That's optimum Will Ospreay investment, realistically. Mm. And when as good as these matches are, you're not at optimum Will Ospreay investment level yet.
To close out the show, out came the number one contender, Swerve Strickland and Prince Nana. He said last week, I left Joe with fear. He ran off like a little bitch as I held the world title.
Bitches on Dynamite tonight.
I held the world title in the air. He waits for Joe to come to the ring and tell that to his face. Out comes Joe. He's got loads of security holding him back. I love this spot. Strickland, instead of like jumping over the security onto Joe or jumping kind of onto the security, Miller nailed this on Twitter. He described it as like a Mario squashing. He just took out all the security with a big
Goombas.
Yeah, that's it. With the Swerve stomp, basically. He's face to face with Joe. They get into it. Joe strikes first, sends Strickland to the ring. Joe looks like he's going to kill Prince Nana. But that allows Strickland to come back, boots him, house call, goes up top, but he takes too long. Joe cuts him off and hits a huge muscle buster to close out the show. And he stands tall over Swerve Strickland, holding up the AEW title to close the show.
The physical action was really fun, promising ahead of Sunday. Your new babyface hope gets the advantage over Samoa Joe with the use of his manager. You know what I mean? Like, what? It's just, it could be better, is what I'm saying. It could be simpler. It could be better. It could be less wonky and shot dynamics-wise and alignments-wise. Really, really looking forward to this world title picture changing considerably after Sunday.
When WWE do the premise re-establishment week after week after week, it's because
imagine Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso just beating up like Roman Reigns as you go home angle.
Yeah,
for WrestleMania 2-1. It's just stupid.
Maybe Blood Van Rose is good, actually.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just not right.
When they do those, when there's not a great deal of meat on the bone with these, with those WWE programs, and it's all about getting the lines out so that the video package is perfect. You've got these killer lines interspersed with footage of them fighting. In AEW, I think, ideally, you don't want to have too many premise re-establishment programs, but this one, it's more about the physical, more than the lines. It's going to be, and you don't even get the video package. I'm talking about the video package in your mind. What physical are you going to remember between?
You'll get one at AEW, probably.
Yeah, like with Joan Swerve, you, like what flashpoints are in your mind?
This will happen 5 seconds after the last match ends.
But the physicality, the point I'm making is the Swerve stomp is the thing I will remember from this one, as opposed to very little from the prior weeks. I quite like the bit where
signing the contract in blood, I remember.
I quite like when he put him to the table before the first attempt of the Dustin match, for example. Mm. Those are like the physical flashpoints that I've got heading into the match. So it wasn't a waste of time, but there is no, there's no real story.
No, it's not.
Truthfully, there's not. This is a hangover from the Hangman Page story that happens to be for the world title.
Nevertheless, we will be previewing Dynasty tomorrow, so make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling for that. And before we go, I just want to give a shout-out and a belated happy birthday to David Dummerkin. Thank you for your lovely message on X yesterday, David. A belated happy 35th birthday from all of us here.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
And he has applied to be the number two Sidgwick mega fan.
Well, I will observe your application. I will wait for some others maybe to file in. There are some...
Is that because the number one has maybe got like other responsibilities now? He's had his head turned after WrestleMania.
Mm. He's still number one, as there's applicants for number two.
Okay, yeah.
There are a lot of really valued Cedric Mega fans. All of you are. So, I don't know what to do.
David has been listening for 6 years, so thank you, David, for all your support over the years.
Yeah, that's a big one. Said sick in the application.
Or he can be, he said, he could also be Dr. Fed's assistant, so.
Yeah. Oh! No, all right, okay.
It's clearly a great time to be a wrestling fan if you want to have both jobs.
Trying to play both sides, are we, David?
David, happy birthday for all of us here at What Culture. Let us know everything, your thoughts on everything we've discussed on the Dynamite Review, though, either in the comment section below or on X at What Culture WWE. Watch today, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick
at M Sidgwick.
Stop looking at me now before you do that. You ready for this one? Follow me at Adam Wilburn. Follow our brilliant producer at It's Adam Nicholas. Follow us all at What Culture WWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, including, as I said, the Dynasty preview with the three of us tomorrow. But for now, this has been the Dynamite Review. My thanks to Michael Hamflett, to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.